meeting of the Chino Basin Water Master Appropriate Pool to order. Peter, are there any additions or reorder to the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, we had planned to pull the Wineville Project Grant and let Ontario present it under pool member comments, although I'm a little unclear based on emails I got last night. I'm a little unclear if we're still talking about a Wineville Project Grant or are we talking about a general project grant. So I would defer to Ontario if we keep it under business item B or if we move it to pool member comments.
I'm okay either way. So
okay, well then no agenda additions or reorders.
Okay,
we'll leave it as item B.
We'll leave it there. All right. Okay, you have the consent calendar, minutes, financial reports, and water transactions. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar? Move approval. A motion by Chino.
Second.
Second up by Ontario. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? No. So we'll move on to two, which is business items. Water Master Fiscal Year 2014-15 Proposed Budget. Peter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members of the pool. I will lead off a presentation that Joe has worked on quite a bit. We have a few slides to come up. Thank you, Dan. And let me take the first couple before I turn it over to Joe. We wanted to today's consideration for the pool is recommending approval of the budget to the advisory committee, which is set to meet on Thursday this week. And I wanted to start the budget presentation by showing you some of the drivers that go into creating a budget for Water Master. And so on the next slide, you see the summary of our drivers. These are not new to everyone, but it's always good from time to time to recap what is it that drives Water Master expenses. This presentation, I believe, was posted last week and has been available for a few days for everyone to see, but bear with me as I go through these again. Of course, we have the judgment and the rules and regulations that were adopted at the time, pooling plans and so on, and as they have been amended over time. We have the peace agreement, which adopted the OBMP implementation plan. We had the 2004 Basin Plan Amendment and plan amendments that came subsequent to that. The Peace II Agreement and the CEQA document that came around to implement that. And then numerous reports approved and ordered by the court since then, along with permits that Water Master holds and conditions that those permits impose. So all those drivers become expenses for Water Master, as you can see. And this is, again, a summary level, but judgment, rules, and regulations, they create obligations for Water Master to perform production and storage accounting, safe yield recalculation, material physical injury analyses, replenishment, administration in general, creating the assessments, budgets, hiring experts, performing recharge, and then processing storage and transfer applications. And the peace agreement and the OBMP implementation plan drives a lot of our monitoring requirements, and including the analyses for recharge and discharge balance, the analyses for losses, and a lot of reporting. Basin plan amendment, of course, gave the great opportunity to the basin to do the desalters and manage the basin with a hydraulic control concept. Of course, it created the financial obligations to do hydraulic control monitoring and to do eventually what became REOP had to be followed with accounting for REOP and then water quality monitoring and reporting. The Peace II Agreement was the implementation of all that and created the obligations for Prado Basin monitoring and additional subsidence monitoring and the Recharge Master Plan update with the recharge projects that have been implemented as CBFIP and are being implemented or will be implemented in the next year. And then various reports as they've been presented and approved to the court. And then, of course, the permits create a data collection and reporting obligation for us at Water Master. In doing this, I want the pool to know that what drives Water Master staff is how to do our job at the lowest cost possible. So when we present to you monitoring, it's monitoring that we believe is the least monitoring required that still keeps us in compliance. Specifically on subsidence monitoring, We do have the benefit of the Land Subsidence Committee that reviews a proposal and provides an optimum set of management activities, monitoring data and analyses that are necessary to meet the obligations. And the obligations for that come from the OBMP implementation plan element number one. The permits, we're constantly reviewing our obligations with the State Water Resources Control Board and trying to find ways to minimize the monitoring obligations that we have. And the things that we do in-house, of course, we always look for efficiencies and cost savings. So the budget that you see is a budget that we don't believe is a plush budget in a sense. It's a budget that's necessary and driven by those drivers that created WaterMaster and the need for WaterMaster in the first place. The additional commitments are those that have been undertaken for recharge projects, the capital expenses that we share with IUA, and then the O&M cost share that we have with IUA, which is part of the Brightline agreement, and prior debt project for CBFIP, which is now being paid on an annual basis. Those, again, are fairly well-defined expenses and not really something that we have a whole lot of control over. So on the next slide, I think, is where Joe is going to give you a presentation of the information that you saw, that you've seen so far from our budget. So, Joe.
Thank you, Peter. Just to make sure, Brad, can you hear on the phone, please?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Brad, and you can hear fine?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you, Brad. The review process, as we've talked before about in the month of May, there are numerous groups and organizations within WaterMaster that meet to help build and define what the budget is going to look like. We had the Land Subsidence Committee. That committee met in early March. That committee is basically responsible for the MZ1 subsidence management plan. The Groundwater Recharge Coordinating Committee, that met also in March. The Joint Projects Committee, that meets on a monthly basis, that is a committee comprised of WaterMaster and IUA staff and other folks that basically will go through and look at all of our different joint projects that we have. And I believe in your packet for this month on page 145 is where you'll find all of those different projects. Also during, on a quarterly basis, the RMPU Amendment Implementation Committee meets. We have our Personnel Committee, which has met twice already this fiscal year. That committee is made up of the three pool chairs, the advisory chair, the board chairman, the board vice chair, and the board secretary treasurer. We had engineering services on May 24th. We went to the Wildermuth offices and spent a half day basically with a workshop with the Wildermuth staff to basically look at item by item, line by line on the engineering services budget, what was required to be done from the judgment, what was potentially discretionary, and other projects. On the legal services, we also did the same thing. We didn't physically go to Brownstein's offices, but we had Mr. Harima and Mr. Slater in the office. We talked to them numerous different times over the projected services of what the standard basic services, you know, the meeting expenses, attending the meetings, the pool meetings, the advisory, the board, the standard administrative type costs that we have, and then along with that, all of the OBMP type related costs. Then we had our two budget workshops, the first on April 15th, the second one on April 22nd. And from all of those different committees and all of those different comments and concerns, we developed the budget, which is the budget that you're looking at today. It is going to be going through all three pools. It's gone through the agricultural pool, the non-agricultural pool last week, obviously going through the appropriative pool today. This Thursday, it will go for approval from the advisory, and then finally, next week, approval at the board level. Any questions so far? And please, just so that everyone knows, if there are any questions, please just go ahead and stop me. There's no sense to hold your questions until the end. This is a chart that you've seen numerous times before. It's the historical production and budget. And what you'll see it is the information that's going back from 1976 to 77 to current. The 13-14 is what we're budgeting. You'll see that we have the total production for all the fiscal years down to 131,000 of what we're projecting. You'll see that you've got the agricultural pool production, the appropriated pool production, the agricultural pool production, and then finally the non-agricultural pool production. This is our actual budget numbers going all the way back from 1976 again. You'll see during these time periods, that's when we had the OBMP and peace agreement, so you'll understand why there was a cost spiking there. Over the last 3 or 4 years, you'll notice that the budget has been relatively flat. This fiscal year, there's a little more than $1 million in there for recharge implementation projects. That's why this column is a little bit higher. If we were to strip that $1 million out, we would be just a little bit over $6 million. So again, we're presenting a budget that, while it appears to be higher, our relative expenses are remaining relatively flat.
Joe, can I ask a
quick
question? If Watermaster was doing a two-year budget, is there any sense of projecting out to the next year what you would expect the total budget to be?
If I was going to project going forward, this budget, obviously there are some certain factors that I don't know of which, but if I was to project this forward, it would be just a little bit slightly lower, because I believe we're projecting next year lower dollars for the recharge implementation projects. I believe we have a three-year kind of projected cycle of where we're going to be. This year, I think we're at just a little bit over $1 million for recharge projects. Next year, I believe it is in the $700,000 or $800,000. I'd have to look to verify. But yes, I would expect that if we were to look at this on a two-year cycle, it would be relatively the same. The one item to note on here, basically we have an inverse relationship. When you look at total production, when production drops, the assessments increase. And you can definitely see this from here's where you can see the total production dropping. And in relative fashion, the assessments are increasing. Inversely, if production increases, the assessment decreases. This is a slide that you've seen before. This is showing the approved budget, the amended budget, the preliminary budget, which was shown at the, I believe, the first budget workshop. This is what was shown at the second budget workshop. The difference between these two numbers is $125,000. The $125,000 is $75,000, which is budgeted for the Santa Ana River Habitat Conservation Program. Again, that's $75,000, which is shown down in this dollar category. And then up in this dollar category, we are showing an additional $50,000 for recharge O&M. Again, those were two categories that were discussed and recommended to be brought forward during our last joint recharge program. Again, you'll notice here the budget of $7,316,381. That is the total dollar budget. But that is basically, not the total dollars of what is calculated when we do the production-based assessments. So if you take this $7,316,000 and then you start backing out, you're still going to pay for these items, but you pay for them separately based on either operating safe yield or whether they are being charged directly to your pools. So you'll notice the debt service and improvement recharge improvements, almost $1.5 million. Then the appropriated pool legal services, that's $75,000. That would be paid just strictly by the appropriated pool. The non-agricultural pool, $60,000. That would be paid directly by the non-agricultural pool. Then we have some interest income. We invest our funds in LAIF. So we do get a little bit of interest there, so we're estimating $25,000 this year. And then we have our dry year yield groundwater storage program that we bill to MWD each year. That's $155,000. So that basically will, again, reduce the assessment. So if we take the $7,316,000 minus out this $1,814,000, then we come to what we call the basis for assessment. That's $5,501,515, or $511,000. That's the dollar amount that we use divided by our estimated production of $131,000 to come up with an estimated assessment this fiscal year of $41.88. If we look at some of our key components, as Peter had mentioned, we have our drivers, but there's some definite key components that we can look at. We've got labor, we have legal services, we have engineering services, and then within the recharge component, we have three components of recharge O&M, recharge capital projects, the debt service payments. You can see that there's the total there for those three. Then we have our G&A expenses. That's our rent and utilities and all of the other basic standard items that you have on a day-to-day basis just to keep the office open. And then all of the other expenses are items that if it's not labor, legal, engineering, recharge, or G&A, it falls into this category. So you'll see this category or this column shows the fiscal year 2008-2009 actuals, $7.7 million. Next fiscal year, 2009-2010 actuals, $7.2 million. And so on. We go all the way to fiscal year 2012-2013 actual of $5.7. Again, these are all actuals. Our amended budget, $6.9, almost $7 million, compared to where we're our projection for our budget this year, $7.3 million. If we look at this from a pictorial view, you'll see again here's fiscal year 2008-2009 actuals, all the way actuals, and this is our budget, this is projected. If you look at the colors here, you'll see blue is labor, so labor just relatively flat, just slightly increasing. The red is legal, again relatively flat. If we look at engineering, that's the green line, you'll notice that back actual 2008-2009, over $2.5 million. And over the fiscal years, we're dropping now down to our actual engineering budget we're projecting this year is about $1.7 million. The recharge O&M, recharge capital projects and debt service, that is the purple line. So you'll notice that it's back in these years, we had very little recharge projects, but we had a lot of debt service. In these fiscal years is when IUA refinanced some of the debt. And now you'll notice that it's starting to climb up again. It's climbing up again because we have budgeted in this fiscal year over $1 million in debt recharge projects, about $750,000 for the recharge O&M and about $450,000 for debt service payments. G&A expenses, the light blue line, you'll notice that that's, again, relatively flat. And then final, all other expenses, the trend is going down. Any questions so far? Again, I think the important thing to notice here, our engineering services over the fiscal years is decreasing. If we look at the types of expenses, categories versus classifications, you'll see on the top you've got labor, legal, engineering, all other expenses, and then here's our fiscal year 2014-15 proposed budget. G&A expenses are categories of labor and burden, $1,089,000, legal services, $469,000. In G&A expenses, we don't have any engineering services. Then we have $400,000 for all other expenses. Again, that is the rent, postage, office, IT services, all of the things that basically you need to keep the office running. G&A total then, $1,967,000. OBMP expenses contains all four categories. You see labor, $120,000, legal services of $405,000, engineering $656,000, all other expenses, a total of $1,343,000. Project expenses, we have labor and burden, no legal services, we have engineering services, all other expenses. Now, this $2.6 million, almost $2.2 million of that is recharge projects, debt service, and O&M. So if you really, that's about 85% just right there. The remaining 15% is all of the other project-related expenses. So that total, $4,000, for again, total $7,316,381. Then if we look at our labor, $1,462,000, legal services, $875,000, engineering services I mentioned earlier, $1,716,000. All other expenses, including all of those project costs, $3,261,000, again, for a total of $7,316,000. Any questions so far? Okay, thank you. Now, this concludes...
Joe, let me stop you there for a second. I wanted to check with the appropriative pool. Joe has finished presenting what I asked him to prepare, which was an executive summary of the budget. This is a budget that was first presented to the pool in a workshop approximately 4 weeks ago. It hasn't changed since that time. We've had some interaction with some parties that had questions. We've tried to answer those questions. We had a second workshop where we went into a little more detail. And essentially what you're seeing is a budget that has the major components that Joe mentioned. Labor is just a tick up. You have legal, which is a tick down. You have engineering, which is lower. And you have recharge projects, which is higher. What follows is a series of approximately 40 slides that give you a lot more detail of the same numbers. And my question to the pool is, would you like to receive the presentation, or have you had enough time to digest it, enough information received over time? And in the last week since this presentation has been up, have you had enough time to review it in detail and understand it? Mr. Chairman, a question for your pool.
From my perspective, I think we've spent a lot of time on this over the last month and a half. But if there are specific questions perhaps that the pool has still related to the budget, now would be the time to ask. And I wouldn't want to cut your opportunity short to do so. Ro?
One quick comment. Based on the packet itself, bless you. There was the breakdown of the. Can you turn on the light, please? I'm sorry, I can't. Okay, I didn't know. With regard to the attorney's fees as it related to safe yield calculation, I just wanted to confirm which cost was correct. There's two costs represented for that particular item on page 91 of the budget or the package. It's the third paragraph, I think, the third subheading. Just wondering if I read it right. There's a number 110, 100,000, and there's another 100 and 100, or 100,000, 100. Which one is?
Yeah.
I'm assuming the lower one is correct.
But the 110,100 is the correct number.
Okay. Sorry about
that. Thanks for catching that. We'll correct the memo, Raul. I appreciate that.
Okay, no problem. Justin?
Mr. Chair, just a quick question on slide 18. I don't know how close you are to that one. And I just want to say I really appreciate you sending out the PowerPoint early and developing such a detailed PowerPoint. It was very helpful, and it did address some of our questions. My understanding is that the listing below lists the activities that resulted in legal expenses beyond routine activities as labeled. Is my understanding that routine activities would be considered the expenses that would be roughly in the kind of $400,000 to $500,000 range without those additional activities for those years indicated? Is that a correct understanding of in general?
That is correct, yes.
On a go forward basis, would that still be correct?
Yes, assuming when we built the budget with the Brownstein folks, there's Brad Harriman and Scott Slater. We looked at all of the meeting attendance, so we basically started from square one and said, how many meetings would the attorneys be attending. So, you know, an eight-hour meeting, four-hour meeting, multiply that by the rate. So we basically calculated all of the different meetings. And then we looked at the different activities, for example, court coordination and different things like that, the items that we know that or that from past experience have happened. So we built that part of it. That is the court coordination, those different costs. That's what we would call the pool administration. That's where we code those to the administration costs. That for this fiscal year was $230,000. And then the meeting expenses that we know are going to happen, the advisory, the board, and the three pools, we budgeted that at $239,000. So your number right around $450,000 to $500,000 is correct. That's basically what we would expect to see on a normal year going forward, excluding any of the OBMP type related expenses.
Okay. And then just, Mr. Chair, a quick comment. Just we do appreciate all the information and all the workshops and all the documentation presented during this process and the response to our specific questions. You've always been very helpful in doing so and very responsive. Still, it does feel that it is still a condensed process for the budget presentation and review, and there are times when it's very difficult to be able to review documents in the time frame requested, say a week between workshops and so on, in order to generate some questions and have some discussion. And we did have some discussion during some of those workshops. This is a planning document as well as a financial document, clearly. Under the judgment, once we approve this budget, it's an authorization for these expenditures, and it doesn't include an approval process that I think many of us in public agencies are used to, where larger projects over a certain threshold, discrete projects, discrete activities are brought through the public process to discuss whether or not the issue is right-sized or not. And you know, an example for that would be, say, the State of the Basin report, our biannual report, which at $130,000 is basically a half, you know, roughly about a half year of someone's effort, roughly at $200 an hour. It's quite a large undertaking for a report. We may want to review exactly what we would want, what is required in such a report, and maybe what we want in addition to what those requirements are, and might want to have that discussion on a through the process. So I think we would just say there might be an opportunity to or consideration from Watermaster to bring certain items over a certain threshold through the process to ensure that we're not just meeting requirements, we're meeting requirements, but without over expenditures and right-sizing those projects for the public dollars we're investing in this process. And it would also be educational, and I think we've learned a lot through this process, as we always do through the budget process, discussing which expenditures are required to comply with the judgment, peace agreements, and court orders. And I know we have a lot on our plates, and I don't want to add to all of our agendas and the time required to review those and have those discussions, but Amount of us at least believes that we might want to consider requesting such a process for discrete items. Thank you.
I just want to say, Joe, I thought you did a wonderful job on the presentation. I appreciate
that. It came out really nice. I just want to clarify that if we took out the $1 million for the recharge projects, the budget would be under. Yes. Is that correct?
If we took the $1 million out, then the budget would be at $6.3 million. The assessment dollars would still be the same because the budget is based, or what each appropriator pays is based on the total assessable production versus the dollars that we consider part of the production base. But if we took those million, it would be less.
See, I look at it as I don't really want to micromanage, you know, Peter's, what he's doing here, and I appreciate that. I would rather see effort to lower the budget every year. I mean, to as much as possible. And Justin's bringing up an issue that maybe it's through the state of the basin. You know, maybe that's where it could be lowered. But I'm willing to put it on, you know, Peter as the general manager here for the Water Master to look for ways to lower the budget.
And we just brought that up as an example.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the intent is that we don't want to keep seeing this budget keep going up and up and up, and we're all trying to have it cut costs at our agencies to save money. I mean, that's just my viewpoint. I'm welcome to hear anybody else.
I think that's a valuable point, Terry. But I appreciate that, and I also appreciate all the work you put into this. And I haven't participated too much in the budgeting process. I've had others and it reported back to me. I think Water Master has done a really good job of tracking the budget and monitoring the costs. And it looks like right now the projects going into Recharge Master Planning, the capital projects are extremely important. And I agree, it's probably not a bad exercise, as you, I think, were getting at, to evaluate those projects on a little bit finer scale. But I think what I'm seeing by looking at it is that's kind of what Peter's doing, and his staff is working towards a gradual decline in the budget. But we're seeing sort of an uptick because we're starting to see some capital projects and Recharge Master Planning, which is critical because we're really sorely lacking in capturing enough water in this basin. And so I think what you're getting at is what he's trying to do, but we're starting to see perhaps an uptick in some at least capital projects. That kind of goes back to what you said of maybe getting into the granular details of looking at projects specific. So, but I agree with what you're saying. I think that's what you're trying to accomplish as it is.
The only thing I would add in response to the comments is that if you have suggestions for how we can make the process better, please let us know. You know, we're at risk of giving too much process, you know, and I don't want that either. You know, I want your dollars to be spent on Water Master services, not process and presentations and so on. I want it to be effective for you. And so if the way we've got it set up with a Recharge Coordinating Committee and the Joint Projects Committee and the Land Subsidence Committee, if that process as feeders into the budget preparation doesn't work, give us your suggestions and we'll be happy to try to accommodate that as much as we can. But the idea is to make it, you know, give you depth. And so each one of these processes allows you to get as in-depth as you want to be in each one of these cost elements of our budget. And then the idea is that when we come together, it's just synthesizing what's already been discussed and reviewed. Always open to suggestions and input. And in answer to Terry's question, yes, the driver this year, the reason for the increase is more money for recharge projects. Everything else is steady or lower.
Okay. For the sake of repeating others' comments, I'll try to avoid that, but I would just say that, you know, there's, from the standpoint of, you know, managing the project costs or, you know, establishing the thresholds is important to maintain the distinction between what are administrative costs and what are project-related costs. And I think, Peter, you probably heard that, and I think knowing you, you'll take that under advisement and do your best to keep us informed. As you have through this process, I think the process, I give a lot of credit to Water Master and staff for putting together a packet that's very transparent, has the backup, the details, so that it's clearly understood where the dollars are going. And I think you should be given credit for your efforts to contain costs and so forth. Appreciate that. So if there aren't any other comments, Water Master is asking that we, you don't need approval from us as much as you recommendation to move the budget to the advisory committee for approval.
Correct.
So we have a motion to in that regard.
Motion
by Fontana.
No,
Fontana
second.
Union or Fontana Water?
Fontana Union.
Fontana Union Water Company. And second by San Antonio Water Company. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job, Joe.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll move on to business item two. This will be the appropriate time Scott, to talk about your project grant.
Okay, thank you, Marty. I had sent a couple of emails around to, I think, hopefully everybody on the appropriate pool related to this matter. And I'm going to ask Ryan to come up and go over it a little bit more detail than I'll be able to. But basically, there's an opportunity for the appropriate pool to secure a grant in the amount of $750,000 from SAWPA. And that could be put towards one of the recharge master plan projects that we've all committed to do over the next 4 or 5 years. One of the aspects of that, though, would require us to accelerate whatever project we picked. Right now, it's leaning in the direction of the Wineville project, but I'd like to have Ryan give a little bit of background and then open it up for discussion.
Sure, thanks. I think last month at the appropriate pool meeting, I gave a little verbal update on status of this potential grant funding opportunity. A lot's happened in the last month, so I'll do my best to give a brief overview of where we are at today. December 2012, SAWPA grant in Ontario, $750,000 for flood control and recharge basin project. Fast forward a couple years later, Ontario was unsuccessful in getting some additional grant funding for this flood control portion of that project. So Ontario called up SAWPA and said, we're not able to use the funding at this time. We also requested of SAWPA that they let us basically find another project to use the funding for. We had just completed the recharge master plan a few months prior. So we got with IUA and kind of did a quick look at which project we think we could implement at the accelerated pace that the grant would require. Wineville kind of floated to the top for a number of reasons. So we kind of started moving down that path over the last month to submit all the paperwork application to SAWPA. And at that time, IUA had thought they could also cost share 50-50 on the project. This was following the positive results from the proof of concept project at Wineville. So it looked like we could get some recycled water there or supplemental water, which was above and beyond what we had put in the master plan. Last couple weeks, we kind of took a different turn. At this point, IUA is not going to commit to a cost fund. They may in the future, but at this point, they still want to go through some of their master plan projects, do some recycled water modeling, make sure everything lines up appropriately on that side of things. So today, what we're here presenting is an opportunity to use this funding for the Wineville project. It would be, at this point, solely funded through the appropriate pool. The project estimated cost is $6.3 million. Estimated 2,100 acre feet of stormwater capture, if I got that right. So pretty good bang for your buck. We received last night a letter from SAWPA asking that we get a cost commitment letter to them by tomorrow. So a pretty quick turnaround. The reason for the rush is they have to submit their total package for Prop 84 funding to DWR this month. And they have to get approval through their various boards this week and next week. So I think, feel free to jump in, but I think the question is, do we want to go forward with the Wineville project, or maybe there's an opportunity to look at the other list of the other projects in that recommended recharge master plan list to see if we can work with SAWPA to put that funding towards a different project.
Hey, Ryan, is there a reason why, I mean, Chris is here, but is there a reason why IUA isn't willing to commit at this point?
Yeah, I think... start first. Wineville, we think it's a great project. It was part of the Recharge Master Plan. There was a lot of discussion on that. But if you recall last year, the IUA looked at where we have available recycled water, the infrastructure we have for it, and we came up with supporting three projects, and it went through a whole process with our board. So we're at a point right now where we're updating our integrated resource management plan and the recycled water plan, and we just don't know that we have the water resource for that and we have the infrastructure for it. So what we've asked for is saying we just need a few more months to finish some of those master planning efforts to make sure we have things all lined up and that we're not just getting ahead of ourselves. We anticipate that recycled water, it may take some more infrastructure that we're going to have to work through the sewage agencies to deal with on that. But we anticipate that down the road that this is a great project that we will end up getting recycled water to long term. So we really anticipate that. We just are a little afraid that we're doing it too early with the so many planning documents right in the works right now.
Is there a better project that, or a combination of projects that you could support now and we could move forward on? Because it seemed to me like my recollection was that there was originally there was economic benefit associated with combined projects. And I guess if we pull this one out, does that change the economics? Maybe this is a question for Ryan, but does it change the economics of the other projects that were packaged? It's a good project. Wineville's a good project, but...
Let me offer some information that might help in that regard. Andy, if you can please take one and pass them all down. Anna, can I ask you to please distribute these to the audience in the back? What's coming around is a comparison. We were working with Ontario to try to present information to the pool so the pool could understand. And what you see is really two tables. The top half of the table is what was included in the Recharge Master Plan Update Amendment. And what you had there was a project called 23A that was a bundling of the three projects that you see in tan below, 19A, 20, and 22A. And I realize now that I dropped the names off of here, but 19A was Wineville. 20 was Harupa Pump Station. 22A was RP3. So the way we looked at it during the RMPU amendment process is if you look at the projects individually in tan, and you can see I labeled them individual projects as alternatives, the stormwater unit cost was $184, $369, and $918 per acre foot, respectively, for each of the projects. And at that time, we were contemplating yields of the stormwater yield of 2157, 421, 137, and then the recycled water is shown in the column next to it for each of those projects. By bundling them, what we gained is an aggregated cost, a melded cost of $500 for all three of them, and actually more water in stormwater than the sum of the parts. We got up to 3,166. Now, that's not to say we can't unbundle them and still proceed, but the idea was there's efficiencies there that we could gain by doing all three of them at once. And as I understood it, in trying to bring the information to you so you have a full information in making a decision, I took that table and I adjusted it wherever you see highlights if we were to apply that grant that Ontario is bringing to the table. And I have to say, I'm a big fan of grants, right? I mean, it's more money for the basin, so the more the merrier. You just need to understand the difference. And you also see there the total capital dollars and the O&M dollars associated with these. And so if we are to take out the $750,000 grant and IUA were to cost share and bring recycled water, then now you see Project 19A, which is the same stormwater yield of 2157, but now has 1,750 acre feet a year of recycled water. The capital cost goes considerably down, and the yield per acre foot goes from $184 to $107 per acre foot. So the project, which was great to begin with, becomes even better now. Where my thinking crystallized as I was looking at this is, you would have to, as a pool, remember this when the time comes to do the other two projects, because the other two projects are now unmelded, if that's a word. They're disaggregated, and so their individual costs are going to seem higher to you down the road. And so when you're going to make the decision, for example, for 22A, for RP3, you're going to look at a cost of $918, and you might be tempted to say, no, we don't, that's too expensive, we don't want to do that. And my word of caution to you is if you do this today, you need to keep in mind that you consciously unbundle them, and now that project seems disaggregated. And how you deal with it as a pool is up to you, but this is sort of a follow-up analysis on the RMPU amendment math that we had.
So then I would go back to Chris and say, what is there a project that you can support that would enable us to maximize the use of the grant?
Yeah, there's a couple other projects that, and it has to be kind of similar benefit on the stormwater side, let's say. And I know that there were some other ones that were identified that potentially could be, but I don't think that they have the recycled water benefit potential that Wineville does. Like Lower Day, for example, which is obviously far north, and we don't have recycled water infrastructure anywhere near there. Mm-hmm. Once again, my gut thought is that the planning documents will be able to tweak those, and it might affect the ones that we've already approved, and maybe we'll be able to modify that to be something like Wineville. That's what I anticipate that will happen over the next 6 months. I'm sorry, I can't be too committal. It's just that's, you know, where we're at right
so
now.
So is there potential? Go ahead, Scott.
Thanks, Marty. I was, and I saw Terry had a question too. Ryan, do you have that other sheet that we can hand out? This was the sheet that was sent in the email. I would just like to take a minute to run through, you know, some of the thoughts, because we've been working a little bit with IUA and Watermaster staff on this. And I agree with Peter. I think really we're not trying to modify the list of projects we committed to. We're just trying to find a way to utilize $750,000 to go towards the list of projects that we. And so there's a couple of things I want to point out just for the group to consider. I'll wait just a minute to.
We'll share.
So does everybody have this now?
So bad.
Okay, so this basically comes from the Recharge Master Plan update. And this is essentially the list of the projects that we all committed to implementing, kind of as in aggregate as a program, with a programmatic cost of roughly $612 an acre foot for the stormwater piece. And so a couple of things to think about. If the pool chooses to accelerate a project, then presumably that would be funded via a direct assessment over the next couple of years. So the funding mechanism would be a little bit different than the overall program cost. So one of the considerations is if we want to commit to accelerating a project, we want to look at maybe to some degree what the total cost of the project is, because we will be paying, for example, in next year's budget, there would be a design cost. The year after, or maybe the third year, there would be a construction cost. And so that's going to come in ahead of the other program costs. The other thing to mention is that some of these projects have an A next to the number. And if you remember, that has to do with assumptions on a third party removing the dirt. So the costs in this table assume, if there's an A next to them, that there's a third party coming in to remove the dirt. If that doesn't happen, the price of the project is more. In some cases, you know, substantially more. So, for example, the Wineville, if you look down at the bottom under other projects, there's the Wineville Basin project, which I agree with Chris. It does seem to be a real promising project and probably is going to make sense for recycled water down the road as well. But that cost is listed at roughly $4.9 million. There's an additional $1.4 million in cost if we can't find a third-party contractor to come and remove the dirt. So if we were to commit to that project now, we could secure the $750,000, but we're going to have an accelerated schedule. There will be a direct assessment for that project cost. The construction maybe is 2 or 3 years down the road, so there's still time for agencies to plan financially. But there's, when you accelerate the schedule, there is a little bit more risk that we can't find a third-party contractor to come in and remove the dirt. The more time we have to find that contractor, the more likely we are to be successful. So we were looking at a couple of other projects and trying to factor in the different considerations. One of them, just on the stats here, that seems to make sense is the Lower Day Basin project. Only because the cost is, you know, it's about $2.5 million. Doesn't require a third party, based on this table anyway, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't require a third party dirt hauler, so there's less risk in that respect. It's not in MZ3, so I think, you know, if there were a project that was MZ3, you know, that's a positive. Although all of these projects are expected to be implemented over the next 5 years or so. Now, the other consideration is, as Ryan said, is that Sawpaw is really expecting us to move forward with the Wineville project. So there's some risk if we, for example, say, well, for whatever reason, we as a pool don't want to move forward with that project, but we'd be willing to move forward with, for example, Lower Day Basin. There's a risk that we get a letter out to Sawpaw tomorrow. They've requested it by noon, I think. And they say, you know, sorry, it's not the Wineville project, which, you know, you guys told us is the one you're going to move forward with, so we're not going to allow it. I don't know that there's a risk there. I think they would probably still be okay with that, but I don't know, Peter or Chris, you guys have probably talked to Celeste. Do you think that's, if that's not an option, we might as well not even talk about it. Maybe that's the backup plan is to do the Wineville project if that's the only.
Well, I think the Wineville has been the one that's on the table with that they're really aware that we're considering. I think it's fair to say that it would be a compelling argument to have with or a discussion that we'd have tomorrow. If you guys were willing to commit to any of these projects that had similar stormwater yield, I would personally go sit with Celeste and make sure that the application's updated and everything's associated with that. I think she's always been just looking for a like application. She didn't look at Wineville because of a recommendation from SOPA. It was from us. So I think that's fair to say, but we are definitely running out of time.
Yeah. Okay. When the original application was submitted by Ontario, it was for the Ely Basin project, similar to the project that's on this table, but it did have a stormwater capture of around 700 acre feet. And, you know, there's just some different information there, but SOPA was okay with us not doing the Ely Basin project, which requires a significant amount of dirt removal, and the price goes, you know, it's already at $981 an acre foot. The price goes up quite a bit without the dirt removal, and Ontario just wasn't in a position to move forward with that, you know, and so we did send a letter to SOPA, and they were agreeable to us changing out the projects, but you know, I think to me it's a matter of if we want to go in to SOPA with a letter tomorrow saying that the appropriate pool is willing to fund a project, and we would like to do, for example, the Lower Day Basin project, and if SOPA doesn't allow another substitution and they'll allow us to move forward with Wineville, the question from this pool would be, do we still want to move forward with Wineville? So,
with the increase yield that Wineville has, has SOPA been approached on whether there's more money available than the 750?
The 750 is the amount that's left in that round two funding allocated for the existing Ontario project, so I wouldn't expect more from it on that. But that being said, round three will come out next year, let's say, and you know, it would be a desirable project for that as well. Easy as it gets as far as potentially getting $750,000. Just looking for a substitute. It doesn't get much easier.
Todd? Scott, just a question. First of all, I think Celeste would probably be agreeable.
Okay.
That's my sense from talking to her. She's very interested in putting dollars to good use. I think she's very happy with the Water Master process where, you know, the RMPU in particular, where you all indicated such a great willingness to invest in the basin. I mean, that she's very willing to support. I can't speak for her, of course, but, you know, I think, like Chris, I share the view that if we talk to her, we could get her to agree. Have you thought about San Sebastian as an alternative, just above Lower Day? And what I'm thinking is, it's nowhere near in terms of total stormwater yield.
That already has funding from that same grant.
Oh, okay. All right. There goes that idea.
But to answer your question, I hadn't thought about it, but he has.
Yeah, okay.
Todd, you had a question, comment?
Yeah, just two questions. Chris, the decisions on Wineville, is it a supply issue or an infrastructure issue or a combination of both?
For recycled water. Yeah.
Okay. You know, there's long-term plans and discussions about bringing recycled water north from the RCRA plant in our service territory, which could be a supplemental supply for recycled water. There's lots of moving parts to that, and that's, you know, that's not necessarily on the table right now, but that's part of a future grant application. But also, the RP3 improvements, you have a large recycled water benefit there, and you're already putting recycled water there. Could you apply the grant to bring down the $915 per acre foot cost and do the improvements? Would you have the water there since the infrastructure is already in place at that facility?
Yeah, and I think one of the hesitancies we had doing anything with RP3 at this point is that we've got the recycled water line coming over there. We need to do a better understanding, really understanding what new infrastructure would mean as far as new yield. And so we really, it kind of goes back to the proof of concept type thing. You know, I think a lot of people around this table, I mean, when we anticipated some of the original yield of the recharge during the original recharge master plan, some of those things didn't come to fruition. So we're trying to be, make sure we go through a process of really validating those recharge numbers. So RP3 would be an example. We anticipate over the next year or so, we're going to be really testing that out. So.
Well, I would think that the economics would have something to do with SAPA approving the grant for the funding too, right? They're more likely to approve, you know, the project if it has favorable economics. And so if you submit one that's the highest cost per acre foot, that may not work real well for them.
And this has 137 acre foot of stormwater yield. But I just, Marty, I just want to point out too that RP3 also has an A next to it. And any, you know, that's, there is a risk with,
right.
with that.
Well, I guess my question, the question is if, so it's not a matter of if we want to, I mean, in order to preserve the $750,000 grant, a letter has to go to SAPA tomorrow by noon, right? So if we look forward, sort of the group of projects, there's nothing to preclude a couple things from happening. One would be for IUA to figure out whether or not they want to fund half of this and then come back and say, okay, we're good, and then they come in later down the road, right?
Absolutely.
That's correct. And the other is that there's nothing to preclude us from, as we move forward in the design of the project specific to the grant, to pony along with that at additional expense to the pool, take advantage of sort of the, you know, the economy of scale and say, we want to do these projects, design these projects at the same time too. We may not have the funding to do the work, but we could at least take advantage of, you know, things moving forward. Is that fair to say? I mean, I would think that that would be something that we might want to look at and consider as we move along. And
yeah, are you suggesting, Marty, maybe start to move forward on more than just the one project?
Well, I think when we start moving forward on Wineville, we might say, hey, you know, for an extra, you know, $150,000, we can do the design. Maybe it's not $150,000, maybe, you know, those are 1980s prices, but whatever the number is, you know, we'd have the ability to consider, you know, options for perhaps designing along with that effort the other projects. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask Chris to share some thoughts on the process with San Bernardino County Flood Control and where we are with the permit. You know,
Peter and I have had several meetings with Kevin Blake, who's the representative for Flood Control that we've been working with. There's quite a few projects on this list that aren't part of our existing four-party agreement that's between Conservation District, Watermaster, IUA, and the county. It's going to take it's a process to get these amended to either even do some of the improvement on the existing ones, let alone add new basins to that. So that's a discussion that, you know, we're having, and that's we're definitely getting some feedback that they see that there's a bigger value for it maybe than when they gave everything away for free before. So, but that being said, we're working hard on that. I think one of the other things I'd like to just add while I'm talking is that I think a lot of you probably heard me say this a few times, and I know that Peter and I have reiterated this in some of the recharge meetings. We have this schedule for this recharge master plan process, and the fundamental beginning of it is some of the cost-sharing agreements associated with the financing and the implementation plan, as well as enabling us to kick off some of the CEQA work and some of the PDR work and stuff that enables us to be able to really jump on these type of situations when they come about. So we're kind of ahead of where we're trying to do something right now quickly that, you know, hopefully next year we'll be in a much better place. But if this doesn't reemphasize why it's really important that we move some of those things up and we really get those done, I hope it will be coming back to these pools really quickly. So
I guess I wasn't clear. Is Wineville one of the projects that's not in the four-party agreement?
It's not part of the four-party agreement, and it's not permitted through the Corps, which is, you know, one of the concerns that we have. Because we're talking about having this done in 3 years. That's, we've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, Chris, what with respect to Lower Day Basin, how is that project on the permitting tract? And
well, that, the major improvement on, you said which one?
Lower Day Basin. Yeah.
Lower Day, the biggest thing, if I recall correctly, was the there was a gate that's going to be installed. So you're basically cutting the channel wall out and putting a wide gate instead of using the rubber dam. That was the biggest part there. And there might be some minor basin improvements. The basin itself is part of
part of the agreement.
Yeah. But actually cutting out the channel wall with flood control, I think that they would say that that's a little bit, that's the example of something that's amended that's going to start the discussion. And I'm not against doing that because I think we need to have this discussion sooner or later, and I'd rather just address it, you know, so we all know what the cost or potential political impacts are. So.
Could, just a couple questions. Could we move only if we get IUA and the grant money? I mean, can we make that stipulation, like if we say, yeah, let's submit it, the wine bill, and IUA gets on board later, we go for it, or is that it?
Well, my answer would be that probably not, only because we're not at the start of a grant application. We've already secured the money. And a little bit of background, Ontario was moving in the direction of just telling SAPA that we're not going to move forward with the project. And then between myself and Ryan, we became aware of that. And we said we want some time to go talk to the appropriate pool in IUA. So I think from SAPA's perspective, they need an answer. And if we're iffy, then we're going to lose the grant.
Well, but that being said, so if we make our commitment, you know, send the letter tomorrow, it you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't obligate us. I mean, we could decide, you know, in whatever time frame, 3 months from now, that, you know what, doesn't make sense for us, and we would potentially lose the grant money, right? I personally feel comfortable just sending a letter saying, hey, yeah, sounds like a good plan. Mm-hmm. You know, and make the commitment in that it just says that, hey, look, this is the project, we want to sign the grant money to it, it's going to take time to work out all of the details, and by that point maybe IUA has come to some conclusion that on it, and everybody comes together, and you know, one big happy family again.
So there's no exposure to saying we want the grant money and later on saying,
sound like it.
Well, yeah, and I would just say that, you know, these are projects that we intend to implement.
Yeah,
they're projects we submitted to the court. If you take I would like to, if somebody views this differently, to please let us know. But to me, the Wineville Basin project is good. The Lower Day Basin project, you know, the $750,000 constitutes about 40% of the funding on that project. So to me, that's like a no-brainer to commit to the Lower Day Basin project. It seems to have less of the uncertainty of Wineville. The one question is, will SAPA allow that? And that's something, so I would propose, just from my perspective, that we move forward with that project, and then if for whatever reason SAPA does not allow the substitute, then we commit to the Wineville project.
Yeah, the only problem I have with that is that I think we're trying to get water in MZ3, and so that's why I kind of like those projects better.
So from the big picture in the basin, we've committed... collectively have committed to all projects that are below the $612 threshold. Lower Day is a project that we would be taking on at the same time as Wineville during the regular course of implementing the RMPU amendment. We would not wait on MZ2 until we finish MZ3 first. Mm-hmm. We recognize the focus and the need for MZ3. I think this is a case for, and I agree with Scott, I think Lower Day makes more sense to me. And I think we can hopefully prevail on Celeste to agree to do the switch.
And IEUA agrees to that?
Lower Day doesn't have a recent water component. I mean, would be...
So it never was an issue.
Okay.
And the risk you have with Wineville, as Scott said, is you might, if you accelerate it and you don't get someone to remove the dirt, the project cost goes up by more than the grant.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's really not, you know, whereas Lower Day is just, it is what it is. And
yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer. I think what would be helpful is if, you know, if this pool agrees, would be maybe a motion to that effect, and I think the letter would probably come from Marty. Okay. We can work out the details, but if we're able to send a letter that says the appropriate pool voted and is committed to implement this project, and then I think between IUA and Watermaster possibly going and meeting with Celeste and letting her know or giving her a call. And then if for whatever reason they say absolutely not, it's Wineville or nothing, that's the real question. And I think it still makes sense to move forward with it. It just puts more pressure on us to find a dirt hauler sooner.
So. Well, you want to make a motion? Sorry.
Chris, if I can, how hard is it to find a dirt hauler? I know you found one for Turner Basin, but how challenging was it? Was it a dice roll? Is it pretty easy, FYI, pretty hard?
Free, right? So we hustled and got the CEQA work. You have to still go all through that process, which we don't have necessarily done for these other projects. And then it took, just because of timing, Ontario had some need for it at the time. But we're 3 years later, and it's still not done. So that's the biggest challenge is when someone's not paying you, it's kind of hard to hold them to the fire, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a challenge.
Get in here and take this free dirt.
What, was it a developer? Is that why he took it? And was it because the developer took the dirt? Or?
It's just because he was doing a grade separation project and had the need for the dirt in the area. And that's the key thing. And I think, once again, Peter and I have talked a lot about this. We need to be very strategic on how we do this and maybe have some people bid against each other for dirt at this low cost or whatever and make sure that there's clear timelines, maybe even have them bond it. Maybe that means we pay a little bit, but there's maybe some other options out there. It's not the model we used was great, but it needs improvement still. So answer is no. It's not easy.
These costs, there's a big assumption in here on the dirt removal. I think it lowers the earthwork cost by 90%.
Yes.
So back to your point, if we had to financially incentivize a contractor a little bit and it lowers the cost by 50% instead of 90%, that's still going to make sense.
If it lowers the cost by 90%, then if we don't find a dirt hauler, then the cost goes up by a factor of 10 then?
It depends. Every project, that's a different percentage of the project cost. Some of them, like Wineville, it's $1.4 million, so it's maybe 25% of the project cost. Others, it's substantial.
Yeah, and just FYI too, especially on county flood control basins, what they required is that we had all the environmental done, that we had preliminary designs done so that they knew where the grading plan was. That's work that we need to all do before we can even put it out to solicit for free hauling. So,
okay. Scott, you want to make a motion?
Sure, I will. Is there any other comments or questions? I would make a motion that the pool approve fast-tracking the Lower Day Basin project and submit a letter saying such to SAWPAW. And then in the event that is not acceptable to SAWPAW, that we move forward with the Wineville Basin project.
Okay. Second.
We have a motion by Ontario. Second. Monta Vista Irrigation Company. I'm trying to keep this straight. Any further discussion? Call for the question. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? None? Okay, so we'll get that letter together and get it out to them tomorrow.
Marty, would you like Ontario to draft that and get it over to you? Or
if you have something, I mean, as long as it's not super complicated. If it's a simple letter, then I'm good with that.
Okay, one page.
Otherwise, you can sign it as the...
And we have the letterhead for the pool. We can send that to you, Scott, if you want.
I think I have it, too. Okay. So. Okay. All right, so with that, we'll move on to item 3, which is reports and updates. Brad, if you're there, do you have a legal counsel report?
Yes, two items. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The first is the April 25th, 2014 hearing. On April 25th, the court held a hearing in regard to the two motions that were pending before it, the joint motion of Watermaster and IUA for approval of Section 5 of the 2013 RMPU Amendment, and the City of Montana's motion for revision of Section 5 of the 2013 RMPU Amendment and restated judgment. As is the judge's custom, he came prepared with a very detailed tentative decision, which granted Watermaster and IUA's motion and would deny Montana's motion. After some limited oral argument, the judge indicated that he would sign the tentative as a final decision. the court also indicated he had approved the Water Master Safe Yield status report and set a hearing date and briefing schedule on the to-be-filed non-ag pool motion to amend the judgment relating to non-ag pool quorum and voting requirements. And the judge set a May 23rd deadline for the non-ag pool to file its moving papers, a June 6th deadline for any opposition thereto, a June 15th deadline for any replies by the non-ag pool to any opposition, and a July 11th, 1:30 p.m. hearing date and time for hearing on that motion. Copies of all the rulings from that April 25th hearing should be available on the table in the back of the room. And the second item I had to report dovetails with the first item, and it's that on May 5th, Water Master received a copy of the non-ag pool motion, and it was served on all parties via the regular electronic mail or snail mail service, and copies of that motion should be available on the back table as well.
Okay. Any questions for Brad?
Brad, on the April 25th motions, the latter motion, if one of the parties wants to appeal, is there an opportunity to do so, and what's the deadline to do so?
Water Master and IUA they came out on the winning side, I guess, on that motion, and so there's no intent by Water Master to appeal, I wouldn't think, although I haven't discussed that with the board. I haven't
calendared
the deadline at this point.
Okay. Any other questions for Brad?
Just have a question.
Roe.
And looking at the, it looks like the filing, how do you term this? This is for the notice of rulings and notice of hearing. There's some exhibits, specifically Exhibit C. I noticed some of the documents crossed out. Was that intentional or is that just...
Yes, that was the judge.
The judge did that. Right. Okay. Fine. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Brad. CFO report. Anything else, Joe?
No, sir.
Okay. Engineer's report.
I have nothing this month.
Nothing. Moving right along. Peter.
Which one? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few items. One is on the safe yield recalculation. The Water Master received a letter from the appropriate pool with a number of comments on the base period and the method of calculating the new yield from Santa Ana River underflow and some recommendations by the pool. We are evaluating those and are planning to bring to the board a schedule next week for how do we bring the process forward and to conclusion. That's where we are on the safe yield recalculation at this point. In terms of the max benefit reporting obligation to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the Regional Board had a hearing the same day as the court hearing, actually, on April 25th, and they approved the new monitoring plan that was submitted to them in December 31 of 2013. Part and parcel of that was the CDA had verbally committed to Water Master that if and when the Regional Board approves this monitoring plan, which had with it discussion about Well 18, then the CDA would withdraw its request to Water Master to take action against the County of San Bernardino. So we're in contact with Curtis and CDA attorneys, and we're looking to them to send us a letter formally withdrawing that and putting that issue, that matter, to rest. In addition, the Regional Board had requested Water Master and IUA jointly to provide by May 31 of this year, so in a couple of weeks, to provide a plan and schedule for how and when the CDA production would reach 40,000 acre feet per year, and how that, and to demonstrate that that would maintain hydraulic control after ag production had receded. So Mark Wildermuth is proceeding with those analyses. We have received communication from CDA for their plans of expansion. Their plans include a couple of alternates as they're trying to look at the region and find solutions to other challenges, water quality challenges. Those alternate solutions are outside the box identified in Piece 2 agreement. So part of Mark Wildermuth's analyses are to look at whether hydraulic control is indeed maintained. And eventually this would come back through the committee and board process to approve something different than what was approved in 2010 in the 2010-04 resolution. But in the meantime, we're on schedule. We have a draft letter prepared And I will be circulating that to IUA probably in the next few days, indicating what our response to the regional board would be. And we plan to file that again by the deadline of May 31. Any questions on that? Okay, if there aren't any. Third item is just an information item for the pool, the Water Master Board compensation policy. Current policy is that board members can either waive the compensation or accept the compensation. Two board members requested that the board consider a change to the policy to add a third option, which would be to have the compensation returned directly to the appointing agency as opposed to the individual, and the board will consider that next week. This does not affect this pool in particular, but we thought we'd let you know that it's coming to the board.
Okay. All right.
That's all I have.
Any questions for Peter? Thank you, Peter. You've got some information in your packet, cash disbursements and the joint IUA Chino Basin Water Master Recharge Improvement Projects. Do we have any report on that item? Or?
Yeah, very briefly, the committee wants to comment on a couple of things. If you turn to page 163 and 164 of this morning's packet, just want to report at our last joint projects meeting, these two projects were presented to the committee. The first one has to do with Army Corps permitting. It was decided that it was be put in the O&M budget of the budget we just looked at, so that's online for next year. The second one on page 164 was added to the joint projects. It has to do with getting ahead of the curve as far as getting mitigation, the mitigation effort for future projects, as you see listed there. So just want to, again, report these two projects were presented to the committee and made their way into our budget. Thank you.
Any questions for Van? All right. Thank you, Van. All right. Are there any pool member comments?
Mr. Chair, I've just got a couple of things. One is a notice that our chairman of the board received from the National Association of Water Companies. And I'm not sure, some of you may be familiar with it. It was a ruling regarding water transfers between basins. Historically, there's been an exemption from the Clean Water Act in the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System. For those transfers, that exemption has since been pulled, and it's been being sent back to the EPA for further evaluation. What this all means, I don't fully know yet. Seth has done some research. We had a meeting yesterday to discuss it. There's a 140-page Federal Register document relating to it. I think it's going to be extremely controversial. It's going to require a lot of discussion. Anybody that moves water from one basin to another could be impacted. Groundwater may be impacted. I've provided Peter with a copy of the Federal Register, and I'd be happy to circulate whatever I have to any one of you if you'd like to read it. We're looking into it, and as I said, I don't fully understand it. I just wanted to make everyone aware that it's going to be probably a very hot topic, and it's going to bring a lot of dialogue and a lot of discussion and become quite controversial. So where it goes, I don't know. It may be quite simple. It may not impact anybody. I really don't know. But I just wanted to bring it to your attention.
Robert, we would be interested if you'd send it over to us. Thanks.
I'll do that.
If you'd like, since I do have a copy of that, we can scan the document and put it on our FTP site so everybody can access it.
Perfect.
That'd
be great.
Okay. And my sense was I'll take a read through it, and I was going to tap Brad to have a read through it and kind of give us his perspective from a judgment point of view. And, you know, if we can be exempt from this, that would be wonderful, because I'd hate to see our supplemental water subject to more regulation.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Robert. Any other comments? None. Is there any other business?
I did just have one more thing, Mr. Chair. Okay. Sorry. I know I'm usually always quiet, and I decided to speak up today. For future consideration, and I think this is the right forum for it, we've had a lot of discussion about recharge master planning and, you know, the projects, the SOPA funding and things going forward or capital improvements. I'd like to consider for agenda item going forward for discussion, because for Fontana Water Company has an interest in getting involved with investing in future capital projects and recharge projects. We haven't in the past. We've always, when the last time it was all circulated, Fontana Water Company didn't or decided not to or opted out. We have a genuine interest in finding out what the parties, how the parties feel about that, and becoming more engaged in those recharge, those capital improvements. And so the chair and vice chair, I'd encourage or be interested in having an agenda item going forward to discuss ways, or if there is any, of Fontana Water Company being able to participate in the capital improvements on recharge projects.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. We'll work on that with Water Master. All right, anything else? Seeing none, we do have an item for discussion under confidential session, so we'll take a brief 5-minute break and reconvene at 10:30.
Ready? Okay, we're coming out of closed session, and there was no reportable action. I don't have an agenda in front of me. I think we're done, right?
I think future meetings.
Okay, so we have future meetings listed on the agenda, and with that, we'll adjourn the meeting.